This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 10th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 207 and happy Thanksgiving. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature, the legislature is back for the fall session, the BC Liberals give the NDP government a rough ride over a deadly and destructive summer of 2021. But first, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or are you thankful for a free press? It's in Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Without it, Canadians may not have found out about Justin Trudeau's travel and recreation on the day he set aside for truth and reconciliation. It was so easy. All he had to do was wear an orange shirt, show up at a September 30th ceremony with Indigenous, Inuit, and/or Métis people, and say a few words about residential school victims and survivors. But mostly stand in solemn reflection, kind of like what he does on Remembrance Day. But he didn't. He went to his favorite surfing destination for the eighth time as Prime Minister. His cult following on social media, many call it TrueAnon, like the QAnon cult that still follows Donald Trump, went into overdrive, making excuses for their dear leader and disparaging any Canadian reporter, as if we should all genuflect to the Prime Minister. Looking back at that weekend, it's pretty clear that Justin Trudeau is disappointed he didn't win a majority in the September 20th election. It's only a matter of time before he decides to go out on his terms. When he does, he will say he went for a walk in the sand on the beach in Tofino. Much like his father said, he took a walk in the snow before choosing retirement in 1984. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Oral questions by members.
October 4th, 2020, the second wave of the pandemic was on the horizon. John Horgan was campaigning for the NDP's re-election in the Comox Valley, promising to expand home care for seniors. Fast forward to October 4th, 2021, in the middle of the fourth wave of the pandemic. The British Columbia legislature was back in session, all 87 MLAs in person for the first time since the first week of March 2020. The economy is on the rebound in BC, but healthcare and the environment have dominated discourse. Those were the topics that also dominated the first week of the fall session. On October 4th, this is what it sounded like when BC Liberal leader Shirley Bond challenged Premier John Horgan about the opioid crisis.
Leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. In July, British Columbia saw the second highest number of overdose deaths ever recorded, 184 deaths, almost six people every day. We are on track for the worst year on record. When he was in opposition, the Premier had a lot to say about this issue. He had lots of answers. Well, here's what BC Coroner Lisa Lapointe said when about the response from this premier and his government, and I quote, "It makes me sad. It honestly makes me very, very sad. What we have seen is small steps, primarily left to one ministry, and that is not enough. It needs a really meaningful response that will actually change, effect change," end quote. So to the Premier, how many months will have to go by with ongoing record numbers of death in British Columbia before this Premier admits that the approach he has taken for 4.5 years is not working?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the member for her question. And clearly, all members are aware of the absolutely tragic outcomes we're seeing across not just British Columbia, but indeed across Canada as an increasingly toxic drug supply has profound impacts on individuals, families, and communities. And we have redoubled our efforts since last October by making repeated overtures to the federal government to ensure that we can start by decriminalizing simple possession of opioids. We have run into resistance on that front, but I'm confident the work of the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions and the work of the incoming federal government will bear fruit in that regard. At the time of our swearing in, the then Solicitor General, the current Solicitor General, made it clear to law enforcement that we were not interested in prosecuting people. We were more interested in finding health care. And that's why we've increased the number of wellness beds at Royal Columbian Hospital. We've increased the number of youth treatment beds in Chilliwack. And the list goes on. The establishment of foundries, which were begun as an idea and a concept by the former government. All of us working together is the way we come out of this, Honourable Speaker. I share the disappointment and profound unhappiness for the results that we've seen over the past 2 years. But I think that the context is important, and I know the minister didn't want to leave anyone with the perception that we didn't have other things going on. A parallel health crisis with respect to COVID-19 has meant that we've had to amend and deal with addictions differently, deal with housing differently than we have in the past, and that has produced tragic consequences. But we take full responsibility for where we are, and we take absolute responsibility for how we're going to go forward.
On October 5th, Shirley Bond criticized the Premier for his reaction to the deadly late June heat dome that killed 569 people. Health Minister Adrian Dix replied,
"We should be perfectly clear that one of the jobs of the Premier of British Columbia is to make sure that when British Columbians are at risk, that they understand the seriousness of that risk. And a Premier that suggests he was giddy because he got to lift COVID restrictions and then basically says that people had personal responsibility is simply unacceptable, and the minister knows that. This premier should not have been surprised. In fact, he was warned in multiple reports about the danger. Not one, but two reports. And he knew that it would have consequences for people like Howard Kalpas. Howard is 60 years old, and he lives next door to Oppenheimer Park in Vancouver. Howard happened to be in Vancouver Island when the heat wave hit, but his neighbors were at home. Three of Howard's neighbors died as a result of the heat wave. Here's what Howard had to say, and I quote, "They died in their apartments, and they found them a day later," end quote. It's simply not good enough. A premier who said he was giddy, a premier who in essence said people had a personal responsibility, well, so did the premier and the government of British Columbia. So I hope that today this government will stand up and take responsibility for the lack of an effective response to one of the worst weather situations in Canadian history.
Minister of Health.
Thank you. And the member is right, I think, to this extent, that those affected most by the heat wave were the most vulnerable. Lower income, people who live in more social isolated circumstances. We saw that in the report presented by Dr. Sarah Henderson, Dr. Bonnie Henry of the UBCM. You see that in the evidence that we've done. And in the case-by-case analysis that will be coming from the coroner, I think we'll see the evidence as well. So there's a number of things I think we need to do in response to this. One, and this is not just a Ministry of Health question, this is a broader question for all levels of government and for all ministries. One, we need to, of course, continue jointly to take action on the issue of climate change, a central issue of our time. Two, we understand that climate change nonetheless is happening, and we have to become more resilient. This event was substantially worse than any other event we had seen in the entire history of British Columbia, and it presents challenges. And the healthcare system responded to an extraordinary extent. But the member is right. There is 570 stories to tell of people who passed away on that weekend. And we want to give value to that, and we want to respond to that with action. The government has already responded with action. We need to do more, become more resilient, and we obviously have to do our share in British Columbia to take action on the issue of climate change.
In late June, the town of Lytton caught the attention of the world, setting new Canadian records for heat. It also caught on fire and was destroyed. This is BC Liberal Jackie Tiggart, the Fraser-Nicola area MLA.
Member for Fraser-Nicola supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 1 week in, I was pleased to join the Premier on a flyover of the village of Lytton. I expected that he would actually follow his words and his promises to the people. I can tell you that if there are people on the ground doing the work, the residents aren't aware. And that is a tragedy. If you're doing your level best, my God, we're in trouble. (clears throat) 99 days, 4 letters to the government, endless emails, endless requests, and the people of Lytton have no idea what you're doing in their community. I would suggest this is much more than a communication problem. I have asked for a team. I have said we need capacity in the community, and you have the expertise.
Through the chair, member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But we're in trouble. And can the Premier tell the people of Lytton when they'll be given a detailed timeline and what is included in that timeline?
Minister of Public Safety.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I appreciate the question from the member, and I want to inform her that there is significant activity taking place on the ground in Lytton. In terms of capacity, which she has raised, I can inform her that the province has been funding the Fraser Basin Council to work with the council in terms of the development.
Members, question was asked, and the minister is going to give an answer. Please listen to him.
In terms of developing that recovery plan, that plan is due on the 15th of October, and once we receive it, I'm happy to share it with that member. In the meantime, the Minister of Municipal Affairs has ensured that there's capacity within the city itself to help deal with the situation in terms of establishing services and re-establishing their capacity to function as a village. About 9 members have been seconded there. At the same time, we brought in a CAO from Kelowna, again, to ensure that the village has the supports it needs to be able to function. We've met with the federal government to ensure that not just the village, but the First Nation is in place and that they are able to have interim housing plans, interim housing in place. The Red Cross has got the supports in terms of ensuring on a case-by-case basis that people.
Please continue.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. As I said, on a case-by-case basis to ensure that people have the accommodation and the supports that they need. As the member would know, emergency social service supports are normally there for 3 days. They have been extended till the end of November, and most likely, depending on how things go, will be extended further. The people know, Honourable Speaker, that there is a short-term, a medium-term, and a long-term requirement in terms of building back Lytton. That is going to take place. As the
members,
thank you.
Long as a question.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. You know, the members asked a serious question. They wanted to know what supports are available. I've been detailing what the supports available, the activities are taking on the ground. They seem more interested in interrupting than they do in getting an answer to their question.
Those were the sounds of the first week of the fall session in the BC Legislature. The session continues October 18th and concludes November 25th. Go to ledge.bc.ca to watch the debates.
Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
What made you decide to take a personal trip to Tofino on a day that your government set aside to honour the victims and survivors of residential schools?
Like I said, it was a mistake to travel on that day. This is an important moment for Canada and for Canadians to reflect not just on the past, but on the present. I was in error to choose to travel on that day. And I apologize directly to Chief Casimir for not having attended the event that she invited me to, which is why I'm looking forward to going to the community and sitting down with them in the coming weeks.
But why did you do it, and did anyone advise you not to do it?
I think the how it happened is far less important than that it happened, which I regret, and we will continue to do even more on the path of reconciliation.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
Mainichi News reports October 11th is a workday. Japan government warns public of phantom holidays in 2021 calendars. Under a revision to the Act on Special Measures for the 2020 Tokyo Olympics and Paralympics, which moved 2021's national holidays around to coincide with the opening and closing ceremonies of the Games, Sports Day on October 11th was moved up to July 23rd, meaning no holidays in October this year. The government stated on Twitter, "Even though October 11th is Sports Day on the calendar, please be aware that this day is a regular weekday. Please tell the people around you." According to the Japan Calendar Publishers Association, member companies' 2021 calendars were rolling off the presses as early as late 2019. In the Taiwan news, anti-square dancing device goes viral in China. A new gadget that can zap music speakers off from a distance has gone viral on Chinese social media after a man showed in a video how the device can be used to stop square dancing in public spaces. Lively square dancing troupes are a common sight across China, in cities large and small. Most commonly made up of female retirees known as dancing grannies, the groups provide older citizens a free and easy way to keep fit and stay social. Yet some residents, such as students cramming for final exams, find the rowdy get-togethers irritating and often look for ways to limit or avoid them altogether. In ABC News Australia, Daintree River crocodile dare off the cards after population bounces back. Far North Queensland crocodile researcher says locals with fond memories of swimming in waterways free of crocodiles enjoyed an unnatural time that is unlikely to return. Local Paul Webster swam the width of the Daintree River on a dare in 1986. After agreeing on the terms of the wager, a carton of beer, Mr. Webster swam across. He said he would not do it again, even if he was offered a whole brewery. Crocodiles were almost hunted to extinction in Queensland. A recent survey proves numbers have almost completely recovered. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Salem Statesman Journal, county clerks in Oregon inundated with calls for audit of 2020 presidential election. In the 2020 presidential election, voters in Marion County swung to Democrat Joe Biden over Republican Donald Trump by 49.2% to 48%, a margin of 1,870 votes out of 164,000. That was a reversal from the 2016 election when Trump carried the county. Oregon law requires random sampling hand counts or risk-limiting audits in all counties following primary, general, and special elections. All of Oregon's 36 county elections officials conducted these reviews, which require hand recounts of ballots for the 2020 general election. All reviews confirmed the certified results. In Crosscut, rare beluga whale sighting in Puget Sound stirs excitement and concern. The closest beluga population, which lives at least 1,400 miles away in Alaska's Cook Inlet, is endangered and covered under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Michael Milstein of NOAA Fisheries says that given how far the whale has traveled, he and his colleagues are concerned the animal may be ill, a worry when a whale is outside of its normal range. One-off sightings of belugas in curious places do happen, including a 2020 sighting near San Diego. In Czech news, one woman's pro-vaccine protests irritating anti-vaccine crowd. Nell Saba is the focus of regular harassment from anti-vaccine protesters simply by standing outside the legislature with her sign amid anti-vaccine demonstrations. When Czech news decided to profile Saba and her pro-vaccine stance, the anti-vaccine protesters swarmed the camera. Even with the help of staff from the BC Legislature's protective services, the harassment continued. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. When your face is gone, you won't stand alone.
This is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone. You won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the people and the charities who are working to house, feed, and clothe the homeless. It is Homelessness Action Week in British Columbia until October 16th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 10th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 10th in 1967, the Outer Space Treaty came into force, officially known as the Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space, Including the Moon and Other Celestial Bodies? Besides being a very long name, it is the basis for international space law. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Happy Thanksgiving. Until next week.